Interview with Travis Walton, November, 1975. Short time after it happened. JL equals Jim Lawrenson, Director, Aerial Phenomena Research Organization. Face the State, Cool TV, interview with Travis Walton, November, 1975. A special weekly report to the people of Arizona, featuring the issues and the people who make the news. Good day and welcome to Face the State. I'm Jim Ryerson. On a chilly November night, seven men had their lives changed here in the Sitgreaves National Forest, near Hebbs. Riding in their truck, they saw what they believed to be an unidentified flying object hovering in this clearing. One of the seven, Travis Walton of Snowflake, leapt from the truck and ran up for a closer look. His companions say he was struck by a bluish light emitting from the craft and knocked down. Terrified, they fled, but later regained their composure and returned. When they did, Travis Walton was gone. From that point on, his story is pretty well known. The six men, his companions, all passed lie detector tests in reference to the incident. Travis Walton reappeared after several days with a bizarre story about a ride in an unidentified flying object. But it's been basically a second-hand story. Travis has been in hiding and has not met with the media. Consequently, there have been a lot of questions about the truthfulness of what Travis has had to say. But now Travis Walton has decided to end that silence in this exclusive interview, or this special edition of Face the State. Cool newsman Chuck Diamond and I will conduct that interview after these messages. Our guest today on Face the State is Travis Walton. Travis, perhaps the best thing to do would be to, for the first time, publicly recount your story from the time you were driving in the truck. What happened? Travis, well, the first part has been told by all those witnesses, but I'll recount my view of that. We'd just finished working, because it was getting dark. We packed up to leave and we all got in the truck and we were riding up the road, and we looked off to the right side of the road, and I saw a glow that I thought was a sunset or something. I was about to comment, when we came past the thicket that we were looking through to where we could see more clearly, and we saw a UFO hovering in the air, about 30 yards off to the side of the road. Everybody started yelling and they stopped the truck. I wanted to get a closer look and I got out of the truck and I started over there. Everybody was yelling to come back, to stop. I stopped to look back. Somebody called my name, and I turned back around, and it started to make a noise and started to move, and I took one step, I crouched down behind a log that was there, and just as I started to raise up, I was just going to stand up. I didn't have any intention of going any closer, but it was just as if I was struck. It was kind of a physical blow. It just knocked me back. I don't remember seeing any flash of light or anything like what they described. I just lost consciousness. When I regained consciousness, I was looking up at a light shining down on me from the ceiling. I could tell I was lying up on a bed or a table or something, because the ceiling was close. I was in a lot of pain. I couldn't quite bring myself totally awake. What type of pain? What parts of your body? Travis. It was kind of like in my head, but just all over. I can't describe it. I believed that I was in the hospital, and I was looking up at the ceiling and I didn't make any attempt to move because of the pain I was in, but I felt something lying across my chest. And I looked down and it was sort of a flat thing that kind of curved across like that, and I couldn't focus my eyes very well, but I looked beyond the top edge of the thing that was lying across me, and I saw two men leaning over me. They weren't really men. They were a lot like men, but they weren't quite human. What did they physically look like? Travis, they had kind of underdeveloped features and no hair of any kind. And they were dressed in kind of a brownish, orange. About how tall were they? Travis, they were slightly shorter than myself. What type of clothing was their dress? Travis, it was sort of a loose coverall. I didn't see any buttons or anything like that. But being in so much pain and everything, I didn't even think. I just lashed out and knocked them back. I could see that there were two on the right side and one on the left. I jumped into the corner. Did you actually strike them? Did you actually touch them when you lashed out? Travis. Yes, I did. I kind of hit these two with the back of my arm, and they fell back real easily. Did it feel like hitting a person? Travis. Yes, they seemed light, like they weren't heavy. I couldn't stand up very well. I leaned against, there was a bench across the back wall. I say the back wall, I mean, there was only one door, and I grabbed up a tube, a clear piece of glass or something, and I tried to break off the end to get something sharp to defend myself with, but they didn't try to approach. They just kind of put out their hands like that. I was leaning. I couldn't stand up very well, and I was breathing very heavily. And they didn't try to approach or anything. They just left. They just ran out real fast. And I was alone there for several minutes, and I couldn't catch my breath. It was very hot. And I was afraid they'd come back. And so I left. They'd gone, there was a corridor outside, and they went to the right, and I went to the left. You went through the door? Travis, yes, there was no door. It was just a hole, a doorway. An opening. Travis, and it was a curving hallway. It curved to the right. And there was another door with no doorway. It was just a hole. And I went into a room there and... Had you gone very far, a very far distance at that point? Travis, it was only about 30 feet, or 40 feet. I don't know. Not very far. No, not even that far. I don't remember. It was a very narrow corridor, and it was dimly lit everywhere. And I went into this room, that you could see out. You could even see the stars back through the wall I just came through. I could still see that there were walls, but I could see the stars at the same time. And they didn't look like windows? Travis, no. It wasn't like that. And there was nothing in the room but a chair with some controls and knobs and things. I was just kind of, I was hysterical. I was frantic, and I just moved around there for a while, and I started fooling with the buttons there. Did you sit in the chair? Travis, yes, I did, later. At first I just touched it. I didn't think that I should be, I was afraid I'd mess something up and that somebody would come. And I heard somebody come in, and I turned around, and it was a man, just like people. I mean he wasn't like the other creatures. Or whatever, at all. He looked just like you and I, except he had a helmet on, sort of a clear helmet. And he had hair and everything? Travis, yes. I started babbling questions to him, and I ran over there, and he wouldn't answer me. He just took me by the arm and wanted me to go with him. And I thought maybe he can't hear me through the helmet. So we went out through the door, down to the right, and out to the left. There was a small room there. It had doors on it, and it was kind of like an airlock. It was just a small room with nothing in it, and then there was a door that went outside. And it was a ramp that went down, and it was cool outside. I could feel wind. There was a draft or something. It was a large room, that this thing was sitting on the floor in there, and it was shaped like the drawing that they made. Like the thing we saw the first time, only bigger. And there were two other things in the other UFO to look like flying saucers, kind of, except that they were rounded and oval, shaped, and they were really shiny, like chrome. It was a big room, like there was a lot more room in there. And there was a curved ceiling. It curved this way, and it had flat ends to the room. I came out of the door, out of that first ship, facing this way. And there was a doorway across in the far wall. He led me across there and through that doorway, down a hallway, to a room, and I'd had a burning in my chest, and it was starting. Felt better. Was trying to get this man to tell me what, you know. I asked him if he was from Earth and just anything I could think of, and he wouldn't answer. Was he expressionless? Did he have any expression on his face? Travis. No, he looked friendly. He gestured and smiled, but there were no words. In this place that you were in, could you see out at all? Travis, no, there was no way out there, so you were going from one ship to another. Was that essentially it? Travis, yes. This must have been inside of a larger building or ship. I don't know if it was a large ship or a building. I never felt any motion or anything. It was just like being in a large building all the time, everything solid. I was led down the hallway. The man sat me in a chair, and here. A room with three other people that were like himself. They were dressed in blue. And he went out. There was a door on the other side. He went on through, and I sat in the chair, and I tried to get the people to talk to me that were there, and they didn't have things on their head, and so I thought that maybe they could hear me, but they wouldn't answer either. There were two men and a woman in the room after the first man left. A man and a woman came from around the table, and they each took me by the arm and they led me over to the table, and got me up on the table, and finally I don't know why I should cooperate with them. They put a deal over my face. It was kind of like an oxygen mask thing. It was kind of clear plastic and it had a round, black thing on it about that big, just attached to it. I looked up at the ceiling which was just all solid. Light. There wasn't any light fixture or anything, but light in the rod, just coming from the ceiling, and that was the last I remembered. I went to sleep. Until I woke up. I was lying on the pavement. It was very cold. I woke up very suddenly, and I looked up the roadway. I was lying outside. It was night. And I could see a light on the bottom of a flying saucer that looked just like the rounded ones that were inside there. And it was very shiny, but the only light came out of the bottom, and that went off, and it went straight up, just really fast, just without a sound. What were your feelings at that point? Were you still in pain? Did you know where you were? Travis. I didn't know where I was immediately, but I recognized the roadway, and I could see a light down the hill, so I ran down that way. And it was about a mile or a half a mile to Heber, and I ran down to the phone booth that is by the gas station there and I called my brother, in-law, and I don't know what I said, I was hysterical. And he answered and said, "Who is this?" And I tried to tell him and he said, "I think you've got the wrong number," and he started to hang up, and I screamed at him that it was me, and so he stopped and he said, "Okay, I'll get somebody to come and get you." And I hung up, and I just couldn't stand up anymore, and I just sat down there. Were you in physical pain? Travis, no, not at the time. I didn't feel any pain. I was just so weak, I couldn't stand up. I was extremely thirsty. And I haven't been able to make any purpose out of that or anything, but that's the way it happened. We'll be joined by Jim Alonson, of Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, after these messages. We've been joined now by Jim Alonson, who is the director of APRO, the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization. Jim, before we get to you, I think there's one question that I'd like to pose to Travis. A question that's been bothering a lot of people. Travis, why didn't you bring your story to the media? Well, they, my family, told me about the news people and all the people that were crowding around. And I was just in no condition to talk to anybody, especially a mob of people like that. I just couldn't handle it. Is that typical, Jim, in cases? Jim. It is in some cases, yes. I can vouch for what he said, because when I first saw Travis he was in a very unsettled state and he was in no position to fend questions or to respond. You have listened to the description that he gave us of his ordeal. What are your comments, your reactions in comparison with past cases? Jim, well, I was struck by the fact that he described these beings that didn't look quite human. He had described them precisely the way another person has described them who had a similar experience. Now this case has not been published anywhere, and no case like it that I know has been published. So it's something that Travis could not have read anywhere. and the descriptions are identical. There was some apparent conflict between different organizations, UFO organizations, over Travis' story. Why are you defending it, and why did the others seemingly discount it? Well, some people get concerned about their image, and they don't realize that this subject has many facets to it that can be, well, embarrassing in the sense that public acceptance is lacking. The story seemed too, pretty wild. I think of the fact that we, our organization, has now going on 2 years' experience, made us able to cope with this in a much more sane and realistic manner than people without that kind of experience. Could you tell us what kind of testing that Travis has undergone, what the results were of that, and what the plans are for the future? Well, I can do this generally. We had him checked by a couple of kinds, and they ran some tests. I don't have all the results, but I can say this, that there was a urinalysis done on the first urine sample after his incident, and this completely does away with the idea that there was any drug involvement, that some people have brought up. That and the blood sample have really straightened that out. There's none of that involved. And he's been interviewed at great depth by some very well, respected psychiatrists. And they have concluded that he is not a party to any hoax. And that he's telling the truth. Now when we call in witnesses, I mean call in experts like this to interview witnesses, of course we call them in because we feel they're qualified to make good judgments. And I have no trouble accepting those judgments at all, particularly as I mentioned, since parts of his story really correspond with cases that we know of already. Was this under regressive hypnosis? No. Regressive hypnosis has been performed by still another man. In fact, it was performed by Dr. Jim Harter, of Berkeley, University of California at Berkeley. He's our research director, and he is a specialist in this sort of work and has been involved in quite a few other cases. Under the regressive hypnosis, he relived the thing essentially as you saw here, probably with a little more detail. What other kind of tests would he be going through in the future? Jim. Well, see, we're really sort of past the testing stage in a sense. In other words, I think from now on, I think you'd be more likely to call it research. We hope to have this memory, the blocked memory, relieved, so that we can get a full account of what happened. This may take time, and there may be a program delay that we just have to wait for. It'll just depend on how he feels as time goes by. Why not the polygraph test? This has been a major criticism. Jim. All right. Because a lot of people have criticized it, because they think polygraph is a lie detector, because it's called that. But it's not. And Travis was under that impression too. He was anxious to take a lie detector or polygraph test. I advised him not to. And several other people advised him not to, because what it actually measures is stress, and questions about stressful memories would bring stress reactions, just as well as anything else, so it would have been meaningless to have him take that test at the time. It could have been. In fact, one of the psychiatrists said it would have been a disaster for him to take it at the time. It would have created a lot of false impressions. How would you explain the other six witnesses taking a test and having passed it then? Jim. Well, their memories, of course, are not blocked. They remember what happened. It wasn't the same sort of stressful situation that Travis has obviously gone through. Travis, what would you like, for your future? What would you like to have come of this? Travis, just acceptance of myself and the future. I have had a lot of offers of people trying to turn it into some kind of a profitable thing, but I have no interest in any of those kind of offers. I just want the truth to be known. I have intentions to cooperate with research with reputable men that are, you know, genuinely scientifically interested, like the men with Afro, and, but as far as any big project like that, I... Jim. Yeah. I think we've talked about this, and Travis doesn't want to make a big deal out of it. He just wants to quietly find out what went on in that period, if it's possible, if it'll help advance the state of knowledge on this subject. Do you wish it had never happened to you? Travis. Well, hindsight. I don't know. What happened, happened. We'll be no back with more of Face the State after these messages. And so that's the story of Travis Walton, a story which Travis says he won't be telling again. It hasn't been our intent in this program to either prove or disprove that story. There are people who spot unidentified flying objects nightly, and others who would not believe it if we brought film from shot inside of a spacecraft. But, it's your decision. Ours was to bring you this program, and let you make up your own mind as to what, if anything, happened in this clearing on that November night. For Chuck Diamond and photographer Dave McCulloch, I'm Jim Ryerson. Thank you for joining us on Face the State. Who have been seriously investigating the same for a year or longer, I think, conjecture, the many facets in ufology that Mr. Lawrenson was referring to are the many opinions in UFO research. Since the polygraphs of the six were administered by a Department of Public Safety, DPS, expert, they are considered state property and are a little hard to come by, but I have a good prospect now of obtaining complete transcripts.